Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe from the Social Radio Desk.
Coming up, criticism of the performance of the South African economy from the country's finance minister as he delivers his annual budget speech.
Our growth has been too slow, just 1% a year in real per capita terms over the past 25 years, well below that of countries such as Brazil, Turkey, India and China.
We will also take a look at South Africa's departure from the International Criminal Court, which has just been blocked by the country's High Court.
The cabinet decision to deliver the notice of withdrawal to the United Nations Secretary General without prior parliamentary approval is unconstitutional and invalid.
And I'll be reading some of the comments you've been posting on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and of course, some tweets.
But first, a roundup of major events around the globe.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. Germany's cabinet has approved a plan that makes it faster to deport rejected asylum seekers. Speaking in Berlin on Wednesday, Interior Minister Thomas de Maizière said,
"Gerade in Anbetracht der für dieses Jahr zu erwartenden hohen Zahl von
Since we expect a high number of negative decisions, it is important that we make sure that those people leave our country."
Dass wir die Durchsetzung der Ausreisepflicht hinbekommen.
Germany has recently stepped up deportations of illegal immigrants not recognized as refugees. According to the government of Chancellor Angela Merkel, 200,000 refugees have seen their application for asylum turned down. The new law to accelerate their repatriation is being criticized by human rights organizations. The government of the United States of America plans to deport around 1 million undocumented immigrants, according to White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer. The announcement was preceded by new orders issued by the administration of President Donald Trump for a crackdown on the country's 11 million illegal immigrants. The human rights organization Amnesty International said on Wednesday that U.S. President Donald Trump's poisonous rhetoric during his election campaign led a global trend that has made the world a darker place. In its annual report covering 159 countries, Amnesty International said principles of human dignity and equality had come under assault from politicians seeking election. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. South Africa's High Court today blocked the government's attempt to withdraw from the International Criminal Court, ICC. Analyst Tini Kumalulekwe from the University of Pretoria assessed the meaning of this decision for the government of President Jacob Zuma.
The news itself is devastating for the government. It is a severe setback for them. One hopes that perhaps they are getting the message from the courts that the constitution is important and that it is important to abide by it.
South Africa's Justice Minister Michael Masuta said the government would press ahead with withdrawing from the ICC. He noted that the ruling was based largely on the fact that the decision to pull out did not pass first through Parliament. Malawi's President Peter Mutharika on Wednesday fired the country's agriculture minister George Chaponda, who is alleged to have profited from a 30 million euro deal to import maize from Zambia. Chaponda was considered a potential successor of Mutharika. He was dismissed a day after investigators raided his home, where they reportedly found the equivalent of hundreds of thousands of euros in cash. The former Director General of Gambia's National Intelligence Agency, Yankuba Bajie, was arrested on Wednesday, authorities announced. No reasons were given for his detention. The Secret Service became feared under the rule of former President Yahya Jammeh for the intimidation, torture and killings of opponents. New President Adama Barrow has promised investigations into alleged human rights violations carried out under Jammeh. For more news and information, download the DW app from the Google Play Store or from iTunes. I'm Christina Kripal.
And you're listening to Africa Link with me, Mark Caldwell. In South Africa, Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan was delivering his annual budget to Parliament on Wednesday amid speculation that he might be removed from his post in a cabinet reshuffle. Gordhan is widely seen as being at loggerheads with President Jacob Zuma. Separately on Wednesday, South Africa's High Court blocked the government's attempt to withdraw from the International Criminal Court. Tiniko Maluleka is a political analyst at the University of Pretoria.
The judge has found that the decision is contrary to the constitution and that it would amount to undermining of the doctrine of the separation of powers. That is the powers of the executive and the powers of parliament. That in this case, it looks as if the executive has usurped the power of parliament.
South Africa announced its intention to leave the ICC in 2015 after the court criticised it for disregarding an order to arrest Sudanese President Omar Hassan al-Bashir while he was on South African territory. Our correspondent Subri Govender has the latest details.
The Pretoria High Court, in its decision, ordered that President Jacob Zuma should revoke the decision to leave the ICC. In his ruling, the Deputy Judge President, Phineas Mojopelo, said the government should seek Parliament's approval to break international treaties because it was unconstitutional for Zuma to take such decisions unilaterally.
The Cabinet decision to deliver the notice of withdrawal to the United Nations Secretary General without prior parliamentary approval is unconstitutional and invalid. The Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services and the President of the Republic of South Africa are ordered to forthwith revoke the notice of withdrawal.
The judge delivered the order following an application by the official opposition party, Democratic Alliance, that Parliament was not consulted by the government on the matter. Reacting to the court ruling, the government said it's still consulting on the matter before deciding whether to appeal or not. But James Self, a member of parliament for the opposition Democratic Alliance, said it was clear that the government should have consulted the people before taking such a major decision. Meanwhile, the beleaguered finance minister Pravin Gordhan presented a 113 billion euros budget in parliament today. The money is not only meant for health, education and other services to the people, but also to tackle unemployment. Gordhan also announced measures that will help the government's latest moves to introduce rapid economic transformation for majority of the black people.
Wealth remains highly concentrated. 95% of wealth is in the hands of 10% of the population. 35% of the labor force are unemployed or have given up hope of finding work. Our growth has been too slow, just 1% a year in real per capita terms over the past 25 years.
The minister said once again, his ministry has to make tough choices to overcome rising unemployment, poverty and inequality in the country.
We face an uncertain and complex environment. At the same time, we face immense transformational challenges. We must overcome the inequalities and divisions of our society, and all South Africans must share in a prosperous future.
Gordhan, who is at loggerheads with President Zuma, has indicated that he would accept any decision by Zuma to remove him from office. But the move might highly affect South Africa as an investment destination.
Subri Govender reporting. Isaac, plenty about Zuma on social media, I suspect, and about the ICC as well, presumably.
Yes, indeed, Mark. You know, we have comments on our Facebook page. Jean-Claude Vignori says 2017 is definitely the year of judges. Elvis Els says the government will either just ignore the courts or partly will approve. It's just a waste of time and money. Themba Massa says these courts and judges have become oriented with the Democratic Alliance and will support it in every way as long as it's against the ANC. The judgment is invalid. Jason seemed to disagree. He says, no, the judgment is valid. That's what the court has ruled. So you want them to let the ANC do what they want? Mark, I'll just read a few more before we can move on to other stories.
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, Nomlele says the question is, why does the Democratic Alliance want South Africa to stay in a biased ICC, yet the US goes unpunished for killing millions? Kumalo also says the problem with the South African constitution is that it gives rise to differences on how certain issues are reinterpreted. Finally, Bello Ishaku says, indeed, South Africa has the right either to withdraw from the ICC court or keep staying.
Isaac, many thanks. In the United States, the Trump administration has issued tough new orders for a sweeping crackdown on illegal immigrants, putting nearly all of the country's 11 million undocumented foreign nationals in its crosshairs. Here's Jane Yingyi with the details.
The new rules make it easier for U.S. Border Patrol and immigration officers to deport any illegal immigrants they find, with only a few exceptions, such as those who entered the United States illegally as children. The priority for deportation will remain undocumented immigrants convicted of crimes, as well as those who've been charged or who potentially face criminal charges. Those not tied to any crime will no longer be considered a low priority for deportation as they were under the Obama administration. John Kerry, Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, who issued the orders, said they were necessary to address a problem that has overwhelmed government resources. Right groups have labeled the orders as witch hunt. Other critics include the New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, who said the new deportation policy would undermine the inclusiveness that has helped to make New York the safest big city in the nation.
Jane Ningi reporting. Isaac, do we have any comments on these latest restrictions by the Trump administration?
Yes, Mark. Anything to do with the US President Donald Trump will definitely generate comments. The Vox channel on its Twitter page said, under Donald Trump's immigration crackdown, almost everyone in the US without papers is a priority of deportation. Dom says there's no Trump travel ban in place as the courts overruled it. Baker says people need to check the facts before they react and spread and they sell fear. The media is partly to blame. And Nuncio says sovereign countries must maintain the right to deport whoever doesn't belong to that nation. Simple as that.
And new topics apart from Donald Trump.
Yeah, the new topic we have on social media trending is about the Nigerian president. I mean, a spokesman for the president says he needs further rest in Britain following medical tests, but there's no need to worry about. And it has generated some comments. The hashtag bring back our president is trending. Eka Eya says, we cannot afford to have London-based president. It is time for Mr. President to return. Justice Mather says African leaders must build proper healthcare facilities in their countries. Going to Europe for medical attention must fall. And Manasseh Akucha says, if the president is healthy, why does he need more rest?
Are there more sympathetic comments for Buhari, other than those imploring him to come home?
Sure. Rinorich Ozevehe says, no cause for alarm, Baba Buhari. God is with you. You will return to Nigeria very soon in good health, wishing you quick recovery. Ver Adza says, at the age of 74, if one is not dead, then it is something to celebrate. Long live Mr. President. And there is a survey that is going on, well, making rounds on Twitter. It says, who will come back first, President Buhari or Cameroon's internet? Because the two hashtags are trending, that's bring back our internet or bring back our president. And according to this mock survey, 57% Buhari says will be back and 43% for Cameroon's internet. Very funny indeed for how some people use social media. Anyway, Abdulahab Ahmed says President Muhammadu Buhari will be back to his office healthier than before. Now, very quickly, Mark, there are some live, comments coming in on our Facebook page because we told our listeners to keep on sending those comments and would always read them whenever we can. Someone who goes by the name of Kojo Asare says, Africans like voting for old men too much. How can someone between the age of 70 to 75 be a president of the country? Anyway, wish them good luck. And then Chinedu says, our president, we voted for you, and all we can wish for you is for a quick recovery and a safe return to Nigeria. In the meantime, other people are sending their comments saying, all is well in Nigeria, despite the fact that the president is not doing well. And finally, Mark, Adejo Odoja says, We wish all the best for His Excellency, President Muhammadu Buhari. Back to you, Mark.
Many thanks, Isaac. You're listening to Africa Link, coming to you from DW in Bonn, Germany, with me, Mark Caldwell, and Isaac Mugabe at the social media desk. You're listening to Africa Link with me, Mark Caldwell.
And Isaac Mugabe at the social media desk.
Coming up, climate change is blamed for the destruction of cocoa plantations in Ivory Coast.
From the middle of the field, you can see the full extent of the damage. There are no more leaves on the cocoa plants.
No, vraiment, c'est la domination.
That story a little later. Amnesty International has just released its latest annual report, and it says that US President Donald Trump's poisonous rhetoric made politics increasingly divisive in 2016, turning the world into a darker place. Amnesty International Secretary General Salil Shetty.
In 2016, we saw a shocking rise of the politics of fear and hate. So we had politicians across the world dividing societies, polarizing societies, scapegoating minorities, migrants, refugees.
The consequence of this, the head of Amnesty went on to say, was a complete free fall in human rights. But his message was not entirely negative.
Leaders and governments are failing us, but fortunately people are standing up. And we've seen this now in the United States with post-Trump election. But we've seen this in the Gambia and West Africa.
Salil Shetty, let's take a closer look now at what Amnesty's report has been saying about the continent of Africa. Tuzo Kamalo has the story from Johannesburg.
In South Africa, researchers found that police used excessive force in dealing with protests. Over 360 deaths were recorded as a result of police action. Angola continued to use politically motivated trials and security laws to suppress critical voices. Zimbabwe is also being accused of increasing crackdown on human rights defenders and labeling peaceful protests as threats to national security. Zimbabwean pastor Ivan Mawarire is currently facing charges of subverting a constitutionally elected government for merely demanding accountability. Other countries named in the report include DRC, for arbitrary arrests, Mozambique for extrajudicial executions, and Swaziland for crafting draconian laws. Dipros Mucena, Southern Africa Regional Director at Amnesty International, said intimidating, harassing, and jailing people demanding their rights is not acceptable and must stop.
With politicians increasingly willing to discard and attack human rights, the need to stand up for human rights has become more urgent. If our governments continue to use the politics of demonization and shamelessly call for limits on civic freedom, equality, privacy, and other human rights, the consequences would be too ugly.
Mucena said it's important for the various governments to address root cause of the current problems instead of focusing on crushing dissent.
Our regions are failing to deliver on the economic front. We are a region of mass contradictions, rich in natural resources, poor in human development. So there is a forgotten population. There is an excluded population. Young people cannot get the jobs.
On his part, Netsanet Bilei, Africa Director for Research and Advocacy at Amnesty International, praised Africans for increasingly standing up against the abuses.
From Fist Must Fall here in South Africa to the pro-democracy movements in Gambia, people went to the streets disregarding unlawful bans on protests in the face of brutal crackdowns. This trend of gathering resilience and withering away of the politics of fear offers great hope and optimism for Africa.
The report, which provided a comprehensive analysis of the state of human rights around the world, covered 159 countries, including 10 in Southern Africa, 11 in East Africa, the Horn and the Great Lakes region.
Tuzo Kamalo in Johannesburg.
On the spot.
And this week we're on the spot in Ethiopia, often referred to as an African tiger because of its impressive economic growth. It's also home to more than 100 million people, making it Africa's second most populous country. And that population is young. Government figures for 2014 said 71% of the population was under the age of 30. The Ethiopian government says it is creating more jobs for young people, a move which the opposition claims is a mere political ruse to deflect attention away from demands for genuine reform in a country troubled by unrest. Merga Yunus reports.
The Ethiopian government has announced plans to create more jobs for young people, to be created by a so-called revolving fund of about $500 million. The momentum behind the plan, according to President Muladu Tashome, is the youth bulge in urban towns, meaning there are large populations of young people who have no stable means of income and rely on getting jobs on a daily basis, often as manual laborers. As a result, these young people are living in an atmosphere of extreme anxiety, the president said.
Such youths are not only to be found in small rural towns, but also in large urban towns. And so, if the government does not focus more on the youth, it should realize that our country could again face the kind of political crisis that was experienced recently.
On October 9, 2016, the Ethiopian government declared a state of emergency following the political crisis that began some 2 years earlier. A wave of protests rocked the country, with young Ethiopians turning out in force calling for a change to the authoritarian style of government. But the regime of President Tashome now claims the protesters' demands were, as it put it, the result of the country's economic achievements which the government had not been able to implement successfully. Now, Parliament has approved a new bill that gives a legal framework to the so-called revolving fund. The bill gives the state-owned Commercial Bank of Ethiopia a mandate to administer the fund. It also states that anyone between the ages of 18 to 34 can submit a project proposal to the bank, although the bill states that the bank then gives the money to the youth whose projects have been approved. There is no clear explanation as to when and how they will pay back the money they borrow. According to Communication Minister Nagarile Njo, the new fund is not meant to be just a way of distributing money to the youth.
It is known that millions of youth come from rural areas to study at universities and colleges. The government has no capacity to employ all of these youths, and it is hard to claim that the economy has accommodated them. To bridge this gap and let youth create jobs themselves, the government has come up with a plan, and it has a responsibility as well.
According to recent data from the Ministry of Education, each year 37 universities enroll over 7,500 students for undergraduate and postgraduate courses. Mulatu Gammachu, deputy chairman of the Oromo Federalist Congress, says the new bill is a political investment aimed at diverting attention from the real question being asked by the country's youth, and that is, when is there going to be a regime change?
Merga Yunus reporting. Isaac, any comments on that topic on social media?
Yes, Mark, indeed. This topic is trending right now on Twitter. And very briefly, Mark, you know, it's been tweeted several times and has received brief remarks. Testify says this is the way to go for Ethiopian youth. Jenkins also tweeted at last some good news coming out of Ethiopia. We've been accustomed to human rights abuses in Ethiopia. Please continue sending in those comments and we will always read them whenever we can. Back to you, Mark.
Many thanks, Isaac.
Living Planet Africa.
And Living Planet Africa this week takes us to Ivory Coast, where cocoa production is a pillar of the national economy, and it's also under threat. A plague of caterpillars is stripping plantations bare. Scientists say the cause of the disaster is climate change. Drought has wiped out the caterpillars' natural predators and left cocoa plants too weak to recover from their onslaught. The government has responded by spraying pesticides on a massive scale, and now the population is worrying about its health as well as about its crops. This report by Dunya Sadaki is read now by Sarah Stefan.
Sresro, a small village in southern Ivory Coast. Grim-faced cocoa farmer Kra Coffee describes the fate of his cocoa plants. They're hanging on to life by a thread.
When we get to the fields, it sounds like rain falling as the caterpillars drop from the plants. Drip, drip, drip. From the middle of the field, you can see the full extent of the damage. There are no more leaves on the cocoa plants.
The trees are completely bare, their dark green corrugated foliage devoured. The Ivory Coast's cocoa industry is under threat from a plague of caterpillars, explains Norbert Yao of the National Center for Agricultural Research.
They begin with the young leaves, and what is striking is that they leave nothing behind. They eat up every leaf they find in a field.
Since June 2016, the caterpillar population has exploded. And to make matters worse, there has been almost no rain, so the trees have no chance to recover. Nanga Kulibali, who is responsible for cocoa and coffee production in the region, says climate change is responsible for all this.
The caterpillars have always been here, but now climate change is causing an imbalance in the ecosystem. Normally, their population is kept in check by predators, insects, birds, and other living organisms.
But drought has wiped out most of the caterpillars' natural enemies, Kulibali explains, and so they have multiplied. Farmers fear for their crops and their livelihoods. Yet, so far, the authorities don't seem too worried yet by the plague. Here's Ismail Bamba from the region's Ministry of Agriculture.
So far, only a few areas have been affected, about 15,000 hectares. Across the country as a whole, we have more than 2 million acres of cocoa plantations, and we produce more than 1.7 million tons of cocoa. We don't need to panic, but we're staying vigilant. This is very important for us.
The cocoa bean is the Ivory Coast's brown gold. 15% of the country's GDP comes from cocoa sales. It's the most important of all the country's agricultural products, which together make up half the country's exports. The authorities have already invested almost €500,000 in tackling the caterpillar plague. Most of this has been spent on chemicals. But the use of pesticides is dangerous, warns Dame Pelagi Yuman, head of an agricultural cooperative.
The chemicals we are spraying on our fields, whether we are going to have problems, whether this is good or bad, we have no idea at all. We pump them onto our fields to deal with the caterpillar problem, but we don't know anything about the other consequences.
Yuman fears the pesticides could cause cancer, and Ivorian cocoa farmers rarely wear protective clothing when spraying the toxic chemicals onto their fields.
And that report was written by Dunya Sadaki and read by Sarah Stefan. Back now to our social media desk, where Isaac Mugabe has some comments on the health of African leaders.
Yes, thanks indeed, Mark. And the health of these African leaders, none other than President Muhammadu Buhari from Nigeria and Algeria's Abdelaziz Bouteflika, who are not in good health. There has been scant information about their health, paving way for so many rumors posted on social media platforms. Now, we posted on a Facebook page and asked our fans whether the health of African leaders should be kept a secret.
And what have people been saying?
Many comments have been streaming in, Mark. Anyway, to begin with, Babagana Ibrahim wrote, "To reveal the health status of a president's health would be something new. All they need from us are prayers. May God grant them a quick recovery." Godia Maigari says, "Transparency is what matters to the African leaders. I think if that is put into consideration, we will have a better and stronger Africa." Anas Awudu says, "It's very sad to have visionary leaders pledging to fight corruption at an old age. Ghana saw an end to Professor John Atta Mills. Nigeria saw the same with Issa Yaradua, etc. The young and vibrant leadership end up amassing wealth for themselves with impunity instead. Long live Buhari and Bouteflika." Adejo Ojoda says, "Nigerians have the right to know the health condition of Mr. Buhari because we're the ones paying his medical bills." Abdulkadir Ibrahim says, "All the two presidents need prayers now, wishing them speedy recovery. However, I think their health status should be kept confidential. As long as the government activities are running, I wonder why people are now almost talking so much about their status. Back to you, Mark, anyway.
Isaac, many thanks. Our main stories before we leave you. In South Africa, the High Court has blocked the government's attempt to withdraw from the International Criminal Court. We've also been hearing about US President Trump's crackdown on illegal immigrants and how, according to Amnesty International, divisive politics have made the world a darker place. From me, Mark Caldwell.
And from me, Isaac Mugabe.
Bye now.